Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died. I am Nathan Hale, Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders Fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper, and I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland, and I'm your hostess for this evening. And as always, we are brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a group of people who understand that we are the nation, that we are what makes this nation great. And it will remain great so long as we believe in ourselves and in its founding principles. Tonight's topic, ladies and gentlemen, is the Department of Education, the ADA, and special education holding our public schools hostage. I've mentioned before on this program, ladies and gentlemen, that the interference in our public schools by the federal government through the offices of the Department of Education and the Americans with Disabilities Act, as it applies to education, have created a climate in our public schools where excellence is penalized and mediocrity is praised. I don't wish to sound as if I am an elitist or don't feel compassion and caring for those who have difficulties in learning. I am not an elitist, and I do have a great deal of compassion for those who struggle to learn the things that come easily to most people. But I understand that the world is a competitive place, and our place in it, as an individual and as a nation, has to be fought for with mind, body, and spirit. And that telling our children that the world is going to lie down, roll over, and wait for them to scratch its belly and give them great gifts for minimum effort is a vicious, pernicious, and dangerous lie. The Department of Education was created during the administration of Jimmy Carter. It was intended to be an oversight department that would funnel federal funding to the individual states to use to upgrade their public schools, to provide money for salaries, for extra teachers, for books, for technological advances. It was never intended to be, and is expressly prohibited from, a creator of curricula in any public school in this nation. And yet, through the back door of Pearson and Bill Gates and a lot of other very large creators of academic materials, it has, in effect, created and imposed upon us Common Core standards under the assumption that if the federal government just says this is what you have to know in grade 3, it will automatically come to pass that everyone in grade 3 in every school in this entire nation will automatically know it, because teachers are magicians. All they have to do is walk into the classroom, stand in front of the class, let the class do what it wants and facilitate, and everybody will be equal in their academic achievement. Well, you and I know, ladies and gentlemen, that this is impossible. And yet, our teachers are being asked to create a curriculum and implement it so that every child learns at his own pace and still manages to complete a set of academic goals within a specific time frame. Today, I had to fill in for one of our teacher's aides who has been pulled from her usual job to follow a student in a one-on-one relationship throughout the class day, because this particular student's mother believes that this student, who is special education and is challenged academically, we'll learn better if someone interprets everything the teacher says in American Sign Language and interprets everything the child says in sign language back to the teacher in what we call collaborative classes. Well, first of all, the child himself refuses to look at a person when they're signing to him. He wants to talk. He is not deaf. He merely has trouble articulating his thoughts clearly. But he wants to try. His mother believes that he needs to remain dependent upon ASL because he will learn better that way. Of course, when he goes out into the real world at age 18 and is no longer being funneled federal funding to accommodate his problems, no one is going to guarantee that everyone he meets and everyone with whom he works will be fluent in American Sign Language. But that doesn't matter, because he deserves to have what he needs, because he is entitled to a free, appropriate public education, which means he is entitled to anything or everything that makes him feel good about himself and gets him through 12 years of public school. Whether he learns anything there is secondary. So long as he graduates, has a piece of paper that he is a high school graduate, and feels good about himself, the public schools will have accomplished their mission. The combination, ladies and gentlemen, of special education's incredibly strong role in guiding public education and the interpretation of the Americans with Disabilities Act to mean that every child should be educated the way his parents want him to be educated, whether he learns anything or not, is creating a nation of dependent victims. Children who believe that somebody owes them everything they want simply because they exist. Last week, I talked about an article in the Wall Street Journal that praised 8 points that tough teachers embody, and that these 8 points were necessary for the maturation of any child. They were pretty straightforward. The fact that if you are set high standards and expected to achieve them, you're probably going to try a little harder to get there. And when you receive real praise, based on that achievement and hard work, you will work even harder. And that sometimes we have to introduce our children to minor stress to prepare them for the fact that life is going to give them major stresses no matter what we do. The current climate in public schools flies in the face of this. It says that children need to be wrapped in cotton wool and bubble wrap and protected from anything that would, quote-unquote, damage their self-esteem. Well, I'm sorry to say this, ladies and gentlemen, but my self-esteem gets damaged about, 7 times a day. If their definition of damaging self-esteem is accurate, because I express an opinion and somebody disagrees with me, and that hurts my feelings, and I feel bad, so we can't have that. My self-esteem is going to be damaged because everyone has to agree with me, because if they don't, I will feel bad about myself and I will wind up totally incapable of functioning as an adult. Obviously, it is not kind, compassionate, or just to call children names or to deliberately make them feel small and unimportant and useless. But that basic understanding of decent human behavior has been taken to ridiculous extent in the way we teach our children and the way in which administrators in public schools walk in fear of lawsuits because they cannot discipline a child who is disruptive and refuses to do the work in front of him for fear that the parents will sue them under the 504 clause of the Americans with Disabilities Act, as revised in 2009 and amended. I have here in front of me, ladies and gentlemen, a letter that was written from a law firm delineating the changes in the Americans with Disabilities Act with the amendment in 2009. And it lists the definition of a disability. Under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and I'm quoting the letter, disability is defined as, one, a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more of the major life activities, two, a record of such impairment, or three, being regarded as having such an impairment. Okay, that means if you think you're disabled, you are. And you are hence entitled to accommodations. Now, everybody forgets that there's another word in front of accommodation. The word is reasonable. But nobody's ever defined what's reasonable. They define disability as everything and anything. This letter goes on to elucidate that major life activities consist of, quote, caring for oneself, performing manual tasks, seeing, hearing, eating, sleeping, walking, standing, lifting, bending, speaking, breathing, learning, reading, concentrating, thinking, communicating, and working. In other words, everybody who does any one of these things less fluently than everyone else is automatically considered to be disabled. Because, as I mentioned earlier, a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more of major life activities. Okay? That means any one of those things can qualify a child as disabled under the Act. And not only does that mean that that child's problems will be accommodated to the point of disruption of the class, if necessary, because reasonable doesn't have a definition, remember. And the parents can file for and receive funds from the federal government based on the child's disability. Major life activities have also been expanded to include major bodily functions, such as the immune system, normal cell growth, digestive, bowel, bladder, neurological, brain, respiratory, circulatory, and endocrine and reproductive functions. That means if for some reason you are unable to reproduce, you are disabled and therefore entitled to reasonable accommodations. Now, I can't quite figure out how you can reasonably accommodate the inability to reproduce in a third grade classroom, but I'm sure somebody will come up with a way to do it. Then we have the wonders of special education. I was working today with a special education teacher who told me that she feels as if she's being asked to produce a trained dog instead of a thinking human being, because the child to whom she was referring does not understand the concept of fractions or the concept of division or the concept of multiplication, but when told to poke the correct buttons on a calculator, the child can come up with an answer and get a good grade on its test. The focus is not on actual knowledge, ladies and gentlemen. It is not on rational thinking. It is not on mastery of linguistics, the ability to speak and understand the language of the nation. It is not on the ability to read and comprehend and think critically about what you have read. The focus is on, let's pass this test so we can put this kid into the next grade and I don't have to teach him anymore. And I know there are people out there who are saying, well, that's really bad. Teachers shouldn't feel that way. Oh, really? You spend 7.5 hours a day trying to convey knowledge to a group of students who can't or won't absorb what you're giving them, and then tell me you want to continue doing that for 3 or 4 more years with the same group because none of them are capable of passing the requirements to go to the next grade. You talk about frustration and stress, ladies and gentlemen. That's the reason why so many new teachers, fresh out of college with their teaching certificates and their degrees in education, leave the profession before they've worked for 5 years as public school teachers. It's the same kind of turnover that social services experience. Back in the 1960s, when I was in college, the major of choice, the fashionable thing to major in, was sociology, because everybody wanted to get a job working with social services. So you majored in sociology, and then you went to work for the government in the welfare system. And if you were lucky, after a year or so, you figured out how to find a better job or wound up in the local mental hospital. My friend Bill says that in Indiana, where he's from, they have charter schools and voucher systems. And Indiana is smart. My friend Sandy, who's in the chat room, says that she has an autistic grandson, and he's been mainstreamed, and it's nothing but heartache. And I can understand, Sandy, because I've worked with children on the autism spectrum who have been mainstreamed and put in collaborative classes. I was a one-on-one aide to a child with Asperger's syndrome for 2 years. His ability to process information operated at a speed which was probably 1/4 of normal. In class, he could not follow the teacher's lecture. He could not focus on and understand what was being said at the pace I am speaking now. He would get the first sentence And then it would take him 2 minutes to process what was said. And by the time he processed that, the teacher was 10 minutes into his ability to understand. It was heartbreaking. There was no way that the class could slow down to his processing speed, and no way that he could increase his processing speed to keep up. His teachers were frustrated. He was frustrated. I was frustrated. I did it for 2 years. And finally, I couldn't do it anymore. I understand how difficult it is to deal with a child on the autism spectrum. Been there and done that. And I have a caller. Let's see who's there. I think it's my friend Sandy in the chat room. Hello.
Hi, yes, it's Sandy.
Hi, Sandy. I'm Terry. Pleased to have you with us this evening.
Good to be here. This conversation is really just, I'm a little shaky because I'm so upset about this whole situation. Because my
grandson,
it is nothing but torture. I mean, it's a long story how it all came about, but my son was in the Army and not around the child as he was growing up. The parents aren't married. And
mm-hmm.
now he's out of the Army, and my grandson is 10 years old in the fourth grade. They
mm-hmm.
have this poor child in a regular school district, and they
yes.
keep mainstreaming him. My son
mm-hmm.
is trying to work with him,
mm-hmm.
and he's finally getting a chance to, you know, being autistic, bless his heart, my little grandson just doesn't, his biggest thing is communication. He never
yes.
looks him in the eye. He cannot... He speaks, but his hearing is also bad. So his
mm-hmm.
speech is very difficult to understand. And he doesn't
mm-hmm.
really care if you understand him or not. Now, he's not, he can work a computer like there's no tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
He can
yes.
he can fix my television set if
mm-hmm.
I can't understand what's happened to it. I mean,
he has
his own little savant moments where he can do amazing things because
yes.
that's where his focus is. But they've got him in the school district, and I am so frustrated because my son just found out that my grandson has no idea what the word number really means. This child has gotten to the fourth grade. He
yes,
is
ma'am.
In class with average fourth grade children. He's not only
mm-hmm.
in special needs classes.
Yep.
So not only is my grandson being... just push through the system
mm-hmm. and getting nothing out of it.
Getting nothing
of
out
he
of
is.
It. And then the yep. other students are all being held back when he's in the room because he
mm-hmm.
acts up.
And exactly.
And he can't hear. He can't understand. But they
exactly.
his mother is insisting that he go here when there is a beautiful, wonderful school for children with
special
needs for free.
Uh-huh.
They would pick
uh-huh.
him up at her door, but she doesn't want
yes.
that. She wants this mainstream thing. And
yes.
I'm just sick of it's even an option. Because I also
Believe
have four
me.
Other, I have four children of my own, and they've been going through this. My oldest is 30, but there were special
mm-hmm.
needs in his classes. My youngest just graduated high school. And
mm-hmm.
they my youngest is very brilliant. She's a genius child. But she was
mm-hmm.
always in classes, and then the days that the special needs kids came in,
mm-hmm.
the class could never get anywhere. So they're all
exactly.
the time. And now she's in college, and she's taking calculus. She was straight A's in high school. She's getting A's in college. But she says, Mom, this stuff is so beyond me because we
uh-huh.
never got to that point. And the
yep.
part of the reason was this mainstreaming had held back the entire school district.
And that is exactly the problem that we're facing, Sandy.
Yes,
I've worked in the public schools full-time now for 7 years. I also substituted 5 years before that, and my professional training is I was a professional tutor for over 20 years. I've worked with kids with just about every kind of learning problem you can think of. And the one thing that I have learned over my many, many years of experience is that you can't make it so by just saying, oh, yes, it's good for him to be with other children who are neuronormal. No, it isn't. primarily because children are not adults. Children are, I'm sorry, savages. They turn
cool.
on
absolutely.
They turn on the weakest member of the pack. That has been the case ever since human beings crawled down from the trees, if you will. And putting a child with special needs and difficulty communicating in a classroom with children who are neuronormal makes that child stand out and makes that child the object of being made fun of, being ignored, or being, how shall I say, petted like a nice little puppy dog, which is worse.
Yes.
Which
yes,
is worse.
Because then they think everyone's their best friend, and then the best friend
yes.
turns around and snickers behind their back. And when they
exactly.
see it happen, they're crushed.
Yes.
People
I know.
Mean.
Yes, dear, I know. Believe me, like I said, I worked with an Asperger's kid for 2 years, and the same kind of thing went on. And being familiar with the autism spectrum and familiar with the difficulties, the social difficulties that autistic people have, you do not need to put them into a situation that's going to put more stress on them trying to cope with social conventions that they simply cannot understand. Autistic people cannot read facial expressions. They can't tell when you're happy, sad, when bored, whatever. The young man that I worked with, his focus was movies. And when he got into a conversation or attempted to with every other student, it was always, what movie did you see? And then he'd be off on his lecture on movies. And he couldn't understand why people didn't want to talk with him. I did conversation practice with him where he was forbidden to introduce the word movie at all. He had no understanding that when you're conversing, you ask somebody something and then you listen to their answer and your next remark is based on what they said. He could not understand that and he couldn't do it without a written script. This is very typical of autism and the autism spectrum person. They don't interact well with others because they have never gotten the neurological paths of infancy overlaid as normal, neurologically normal children do. They remain in that neurological mental state of the pathways of an infant. I hurt, I cry. I'm hungry, I scream. Mm-hmm. I burp. You know, they do not understand how to interact socially with others because they don't really recognize other. Their whole focus is them, the world as it relates to them.
Well,
and
they live in their own little bubble. They don't even see what's going on in the room with them. You know, if
they don't.
Like we would change the television channel and he goes ballistic. Mm-hmm. Or he used to have this little train that would run around on a track and make this noise.
Yes.
I would turn it off just to get my migraine to go away, and he would have a fit.
Yes.
He had to have it. And so you
uh-huh.
give to these things, as grandma, you give to these things.
Uh-huh.
But
yes, but in a classroom?
It's so frustrating for everyone else. Can you imagine being a student in the room
yes,
who
ma'am.
Has no idea what an autistic child is about, and all of a sudden
yes.
here's a kid over in the corner start screaming and banging his head on things? How,
yes, exactly.
How is that good for the rest of the students to see that activity, and then that child gets away, quote-unquote, with it? Because
exactly.
he's special, well, everyone else is going to start being special. And everyone else
exactly.
wants to act. There is no way to keep peace and control in
no.
a classroom when you have
no.
these kind of distractions. And this is part of the reason why there is no discipline in school. Because you can't
yes,
discipline Johnny if you're not disciplining Billy.
Exactly correct. I have gone through that, what I mentioned at the beginning of the show. Right now, I'm a paraprofessional, and my main job is to be the what they call the ISS coordinator. ISS is in-school suspension. That means I get the kids who have behaved inappropriately and who are sentenced to 1, 2, or 3 days with me, where they have to do the work sent by their teachers, and when they finish that, I give them more to do. I rarely have more than 4 or 5 at a time. So if they need help, I can give them individualized attention, and I do. But I am not in the normal classroom. Any classroom in my school system, our classrooms hold generally are 20 to 25 students and anywhere from 1 to 4 adults in the classroom, depending on
wow.
whether it's collaborative or general education. In the collaborative classes, one of the ones that I worked in the first year I was an aide to the child with Asperger's, there were 5 adults in that room. for a social study class in history. It was a zoo, Sandy. Nobody learned anything in there. There were two teachers, one special ed, one general ed, three paraprofessional aides who were one-on-one with three children who had very huge behavioral problems. It was insane. It's a wonder that anybody in that class learned anything the entire year they spent in social studies, seventh grade. And this is the result of trying to make something go away by writing a law that says we're going to fix it by changing the way we teach things. Well, I'm sorry. Your grandson and a lot of other kids who have special needs, who have great difficulties with learning and communicating and interacting, when they're mainstreamed or put in collaborative classes, they are placed, instead of being in an atmosphere where their disabilities are understood and dealt with appropriately, they are thrown into a stressful situation with kids who do not have these, do not understand them, and are not mature enough, because they're kids, to accept them. And everybody suffers. It is utterly insane. And as I've said over and over again on my show, we cannot continue to do our public education system this way, because we are making every child who goes through public school suffer a lack of knowledge in order to feel good about, look how nice we are to the kids who have problems.
That's right.
It's crazy. It isn't nice to put a child who needs very special accommodations into a classroom with 15 who don't need any and 10, all of whom need different accommodations. And that's what collaborative class is.
It's actually cruel to everyone in that room. It is it's horrible. And I think it's way past time to do something about it. But now you even have all these commercials on television where, bless their hearts, you know, the Down syndrome girl gets nominated for prom queen. Oh, bless her heart.
Yeah.
Doesn't that make you feel good? My grandson went to they have Special Olympics up here at our high school. They throw them every year.
Yep.
They're all excited. They bring out all the special needs children, and they do all this stuff. He was absolutely miserable. He didn't know what was going on. He didn't care what was going on. And my son and I, my son is totally against the special needs kids being treated, you know, these ways, in the classes with everyone, and then this Special Olympics, he doesn't understand, and I don't understand the need for it. What it turns out to be is a time for moms and dads to stand on the sidelines and bitch about how sad their poor little child's life is, and how they have sacrificed so much to make this child's life as normal as possible. I'm sorry, that child's life is never going to be what we consider normal.
No, it's not.
Your entire world to live the way these children can be the most productive in society. Because Lucas is, that's my grandson, he's amazing. He can do things, but he has to they have to be what he can do. Not, he'll never go to college. He'll never, I don't know, he shouldn't even graduate high school if he's in fourth grade and doesn't know what a number is. And thinks the only way you count to 10 is by looking at your fingers. You know, the third one in is number, that's 3. That's what 3 is. It's that finger.
Yeah.
It's not a number.
It means
it's
nothing.
Not 3 apples on the table. No, it's that finger.
I have had students come to me for tutoring like that. I had one little girl, her left thumb meant 1 because that was the one she started with when she did it. And the idea of quantity was a totally foreign concept.
Exactly.
She couldn't figure out that 5 was bigger than 2, because to her, 5 was her little finger on her left hand and 2 was her index finger. And the little finger isn't bigger than the index finger, so 5 can't be bigger than 2. It's absurd, and it's insane.
Yeah.
Because, like the sped teacher that I was working with today said, the little girl who was using her calculator to do every division step, when she was told what to put into the calculator, she could simplify a fraction. She had no clue what she was actually doing, but she was getting the right answer, and everybody was going, oh, yay, wonderful.
Yeah.
And the sped teacher was telling me, I feel like I'm like somebody teaching a dog a parlor trick. You can sit up and beg, and everybody applauds. Well, the dog has no clue.
It's like that whole That whole thing where, remember they used to have horses out that people would take them to the sideshows, and the horse can add, you know.
Yeah,
they look 2 plus
exactly.
2, and they stomp their foot until they see what the person's face looks like, and they stop stomping. It's a trick.
And that's it.
And
yes,
that's what
ma'am.
They're doing
and
for these poor children, and they're not
yes.
they're not giving them anything, and they're taking away from the rest of
mm-hmm.
the students.
And yep.
That's what really, it just makes me insane. Put these children where they can be taught in their own personal way of learning. There are some brilliant schools in this world. But
there
they have this stigma of, oh, well, that's where you put the retarded kids. Pardon my French. But that's what they, you know, what they are saying. Well, no,
I
it's
know.
Not. That's where you put the students who have those needs. Why
yes,
is there
and who
such
have
a stigma?
Partly because we as human beings view anything outside of what we conceive as normal as somehow bad, dangerous, scary, or whatever. And when you try to contravene that belief by forcing interaction in childhood, you don't create what the fuzzy-minded liberals think you're creating, compassion for those less fortunate. You create two armed camps that don't understand each other, and both of them are scared.
Yeah.
It's an absurd, it's an attempt to put a dog and a cat in a cage together and tell them how much they like each other and expect them to get along when they've never
right.
met each other.
Yeah.
And the dog has never been with anything but dogs, and the cat's never been with anything but cats. It is the incredible insanity of the assumption that all we have to do is pass a law saying that anybody who has mental difficulties should be loved, and everybody in the world is immediately going to lie down and say, oh, I can't wait to love you. That's
yeah.
the thing that got me. There was, when I was working with the Asperger's syndrome child, one of the guidance counselors at the school was constantly telling him, oh, well, everybody loves you. And I told him, no, they don't. And they
mm-hmm.
won't. Some people will. Some people won't. You no, the entire world is not going to love you. And this kind of philosophy is not preparing these children to be happy and productive with what they can do. It's preparing them to be failures because they can't be loved by everybody and praised by everybody. Because we're telling them that the most valuable thing they can have out of life is everybody telling them how wonderful they are.
Right.
That's nonsense. You would
Absolutely.
No more teach a normal child that than you would teach it to defecate in the living room in front
yeah.
of company.
But at the same time, we are teaching even our normal children that, because now
mm-hmm.
everybody gets a trophy. And
yes.
You can't
Third.
Play ball on the playground because they may not share. You know, everybody
yeah.
has to have the same. Everyone... I get
uh-huh.
insane. It's like, well, in our high school or junior high, if you fail, I have a friend whose daughter completely failed 8th grade, straight F,
mm-hmm.
literally, mostly because she mm-hmm. never went to school. She
yeah.
had to go on to high school.
Of
and
course.
I asked the principal, I flat out went to his face, and I said, I know of a girl who failed straight F, 8th grade, and you moved her on to high school. How does that happen and why? And he
mm-hmm.
says, well, we don't want her to have the stigma.
Yeah.
When she gets into high school, she'll have to hold her own or she won't get her diploma. And I'm just like, I said, do you realize what you just taught
yeah.
her?
Yeah.
And he says, well, that's not what's important is that, you know, these children don't feel bullied and upset and don't hate
yeah.
themselves.
Uh-huh.
And self,
the old self, the oh. self-esteem garbage.
Oh, my
the
God.
The idea.
Self-esteem is not something everyone is given. Self-esteem
no,
you earn.
Yes,
it's
ma'am.
It's just like respect, and which there is none anymore. Things
nope.
have to be earned in this world, and you know what? We're really setting up these children for nothing but heartache, because when they get in, maybe colleges will coddle them. I don't know. They didn't coddle my oldest daughter, but they might coddle others.
No, they won't.
But when
when
they get to college, they get to the workplace? Come on. You have these people who failed
yeah.
out of 8th grade but were kissed all the way through high school. And you think
uh-huh.
they're going to go out into the real world, quote unquote, and get a job and get a loan for a home and get all. No. I mean, we're setting these people up. Well, that's why we have all the entitled. I mean, it's all so interrelated. This has been going
it
on
is.
So long that these
yep.
kids who were my sons were my oldest one is almost 30. They
yep.
gave them trophies in D-ball. They never took score. Oh, score doesn't matter. They just want to have fun. Baloney. Everyone in the kids knew exactly what the score was. You can't tell me. They all knew. Oh, we lost like crazy, Mom. Oh, no, you did great. And I always say, well, I'm sorry, Ann. Yeah, you lost, but you gave your best. Yeah. You know, whatever. But it's just sick that they.
Yeah.
And whoever came up with all this needs to be smacked upside the head. I don't understand. It's like the mediocrity of America. And then we sit around and we complain that we're not top notch in math and science anymore.
Uh huh. Because math and science require effort, and the progressive mentality, the liberal progressive political socio-political mentality, is that the best way to make sure that they stay in power is to convince everyone that they cannot exist without benevolent mommy daddy government to take care of them, because when you have people ignorant and afraid, you have control over them. And it's the only way you can keep that control.
And
this has been
like
going on for 30 years. Your son, who's 30, is a product of this. Those young people with their laptops that occupy Wall Street complaining that they actually have to pay back their student loans are part of this. The idea that I am entitled to everything simply because I am. And you can fill in a blank after that with any word you want, and then they will believe it. And it's an excellent way to make people dependent. If you want to keep people in under your control, like the mother of the child who says he's got to have the ASL interpreter, she is wanting that child dependent. She wants that child dependent. She wants to be the savior, the mama bear.
Yeah.
My child comes first. Well, every mother feels that, but we also eventually have to let them become adults. But unfortunately, when you become an adult, you no longer look to mommy and daddy to answer all your questions and do everything for you. Government, in the hands of liberal progressives, cannot have that. Because when you start to be an adult and start to think and say, wait a minute, what's going to happen when you actually do this, then they get scared. They have infiltrated the public school system, and it's been going on for 30 years. I've been involved in education that long and longer. I've watched it happen. I've watched the feel good, oh, don't you feel sorry for the kid with a learning disability? It's only fair that he should be given the same chance to get an A as everybody else. Bloom into, oh, nobody should be asked to fail. That's bad for your self-esteem. Well, guess what, folks? I don't care who you are. One day you're going to fail at something.
Yes.
And if you have never had any experience of overcoming failure when young enough and resilient enough and have enough energy to keep going, that first failure is going to knock you into a tizzy and you are going to lie on the floor and wait for somebody to carry you away. And government's going to be right there to do it. This is a long-standing plan. Now, I am not a conspiracy theorist, Sandy. I don't believe that there's some evil underground plotting and planning. At least I never have been. But I'm beginning to drift that way because I'm seeing the end product of what I knew it was going to be. And it drives me crazy because I am, by nature and by passion, a teacher. My job has been, in every profession I've been in, imparting information to others. It's what I do and do well, and it's what I love doing. The only thing I have to give is what I have learned, and I am thrilled to give it to someone else because they can take it and run with it and make something good from it. That's why I continue to do the job that I do, frustrating as it is. And the good teachers I work with, and I work with a whole lot of good teachers, feel the same way. But our government, through the offices of the progressives currently in power in the Senate and in the White House, have cut the throat of a good teacher because they have silenced them. They cannot legitimately criticize the student for poor performance, that student could have improved if he had put forth effort, for fear that they are discriminating or lowering self-esteem or being mean or abusive. You can't tell a child, no, that's wrong. You have to tell the child, well, that isn't exactly what we're looking for. Well, I'm sorry. It's wrong. 2 plus 2 doesn't make 12, you know? It's wrong. And you've got to go back and do it over again. The number of kids that I see in my in-school suspension room who can do the work but don't realize they can because somebody has always made it easy for them. The kids that I have coming through my classroom, 90% of them tell me, you know, Mrs. Rowland, I don't really like ISS, but I sure learned a lot and got my work done in here.
Wow.
Because they're not allowed to talk out. They have to raise their hand and wait to be called on before they speak. If they don't understand something, they raise their hand, they tell me what they don't understand, and I explain it 5 or 6 different ways until I find one that they do understand. They do not get to chit-chat with their friends. They don't get to listen to music. They're not allowed to play with their phones. They work. They work
so
for the entire
like you
day.
And I used to go to.
Yes, ma'am. And my methods are considered to be punishment. And that tells you something.
Wow.
That tells you something.
Wow. That tells you
we
a lot.
We need to, in effect, punish every kid the way my students are punished. Mm-hmm. Because that kind of, quote-unquote, punishment builds real self-esteem based on real achievements. Yeah. They're going to get a good feeling about themselves because they conquered something, not because somebody killed it for them and given them the skin. You don't become a dragon slayer wandering behind the knight and having him kill it and you take the skin home and hang it on your wall and say, look what I killed.
There you go.
That's the method we're using now. And it's wrong. I'm outspoken enough and old-fashioned enough and hard-headed enough to get on here every week and say, this is wrong. This is, and folks like you, Sandy, and the folks in the chat room and the people in Patriot Families, we know it's wrong, and we're not going to sit down and shut up. Every single one of us is doing everything we can to bring to the attention of those who are either unaware or unwilling to actually look and say, I'm sorry, you cannot guarantee anybody a risk-free, perfectly safe life, no matter how hard you try. Living is a risk in and of itself. What we're supposed to do as adults is give our children the tools and the armor to survive the risks, not eliminate them because we can't. You, no matter how much you would love to, you cannot go inside your grandson's head and remake his neurological pathways. You can't do it.
Right.
But you and his dad and a good special needs school can help him to find what he's good at and give him the joy of achievement within his world. That's what we should be doing for these children.
And that gives a special needs child self-esteem.
Putting
them in a classroom with other children to make them appear, quote, normal, unquote, is the worst possible scenario. But that's what we're being told is right. Well, it goes back to the whole closing the mental wards and the mental institutions.
And throwing everybody on the street.
Yeah, it's a stigma. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah, right.
Why? Why would we do that? These people need help. They don't need government assistance, which is where they end up.
No.
They don't need to live in a box under the overpass. Bless their hearts.
Nope.
They need to be helped. They need a hand up. And I am
not
so tired of instead of everybody gets a hand out and putting, a hand out instead of a hand up. We need to teach them how to fish instead of feeding them fish. And I get so irritated.
Ma'am.
And that's another thing with this whole, you know, mainstreaming the children. And anything we do like that. There's a book, and I'm trying to rack my brain at the name of it, and I can't remember it. My daughter read it in school, and she said, Mom, you've got to read this book. But what it's about, and I'm sure somebody out there knows. I'm not near my computer. Somebody out there knows. What it is, it's a science fiction book. And what they do is they're trying to make everyone average, everyone the same.
Mm-hmm.
No one can be prettier. So if you're pretty, you're made ugly. If you're smart, they put a thing in your brain that zaps every time you think. If you can see well, they give you glasses where you're blind.
It's a short story. It's a short story by Kurt Vonnegut, and it's called Harrison Bergeron. And it's about a young man who is brilliant, and he tells the world that it's okay to be brilliant, and they shoot him on camera. it's because the myth of average, the myth that equality means alike, it doesn't. There's another excellent children's novel, juvenile fiction book called A Wrinkle in Time. And it was written by a woman named Madeline Lingle, who wrote at least a dozen to 20 books for young adults. And in it, the children who are the protagonists are looking for the father of two of them. And he is imprisoned on a planet where everybody is equal because everybody is under strict control. Everybody has his or her place in society. Everybody bounces a ball in unison. Everybody walks in unison. Everybody moves in unison. That is the progressive liberal definition of equality. Equality means the same. It does not. Equality in our belief system, as dictated by our founding fathers with the Declaration of Independence and the structure of our government, is an equal opportunity, not an equal outcome. But liberal progressives want you to believe that real equality means equality of outcome. It doesn't. I cannot be a pro football player, even if I weren't 66. No way. I can't do that. I can't eat. My hands are too small to hold a cotton pick in football. I don't have that talent. But somebody who can, I cannot expect that person to match me in, say, one of my fields of expertise, linguistics, for example. I majored in Spanish in college. I speak three languages. But that's my talent. His talent is throwing that football with a perfect spiral and hitting the receiver's hands as if it was magnetized. And he should be compensated for it if it's of value to someone, just as I should be compensated for my talent if it is of value. It goes back to some of the idiot ideas that Marxist use theory, that if something's useful, it's valuable. Well, not necessarily. You've got to be able to do it right, otherwise it isn't. I can give six different people a dozen eggs, some flour, sugar, salt, and shortening, okay, and tell them all to bake a cake. Well, I'm not going to get equal results if one of them has no idea you have to shell the eggs first. This is the philosophy. This is what's going on in our schools. Right. Everybody's being given the dozen eggs, the flour, the sugar, the shortening, the salt, and the vanilla, and told to bake the identical cakes. Well, one kid
and everybody
doesn't
says
know how to.
They all taste amazing. Is the problem
exactly?
That's
even the one with the
problem.
Eggshells in it. Yeah.
That's
great. I love the crunch. You know.
I've never had a crunchy cake. How amazing you are!
Isn't this yummy?
And those are the same ones that parents have pictures all plastered all over the refrigerator of squiggly lines, and the kids in eighth grade. Look at my
artist.
Really?
Isn't he wonderful?
Come on.
Yeah.
Stop.
The whole idea
of equality is. We all are born with potential, individual potential. I have the potential to be a fantastic mom, and guess what? I did it. But I don't have the potential to be a rocket scientist. I don't have, well, maybe I do. I don't know yet. Never done. I couldn't play football either. Yeah, I'm just a little old lady now. But I don't have the potential to do other things. But I understood my potential, and I understood my passion, like you have done with your teaching. I've understood my passion, and I've turned it into being the best mom I could be. And I was super volunteer.
Exactly.
I presidented committees and booster clubs, and I did all that stuff because that was my calling. That was what I wanted to do with my life, and I feel very fulfilled. Now I'm an empty nester. What am I going to do? I'll find something. But now it's just on the radio with you, I guess.
That's fine with me.
We all have our potential. And my grandson has a potential, but
he's
never going to find what that is as long as he's
when they're attempting to mold him into some ridiculous state called normal, which doesn't exist anyway.
Correct.
It's a polite fiction. Normal is what is comfortable and productive and socially acceptable for you. Yeah. It's not. Everybody speaks 16 languages, or everybody throws a football perfectly, or everybody makes a wonderful mother. I have two sisters, both younger than I. And of the three of us, we took three different paths. My middle sister What she wanted was to be wife and mom, and she did a fine job. My niece and nephew are wonderful people. My youngest sister, she is a tutor, because she is, she. We always used to call her Switzerland in family arguments, because she was always neutral. So, and that was her calling. Me, I have basically been a talker and an educator since I was a year old. I was told by my grandmother that I would tell people on the bus all about, you know, how a television looked in the department store where my grandmother took me, you know, at 1 year old. And I've followed my star. Our founding fathers understood this. They came from a background where people were artificially elevated based on their birth and artificially held down for the same reason. They did not want that in this land. They wanted every human being to have the opportunity to follow his or her own star. They did not want a class system or a feel-good system that made everybody alike, because they were smart men, self-educated, most of them, who understood that the glory of humanity is that we are not alike, that we are an infinite diversity and infinite combinations, and we can create amazingly because of that individuality. But individuality is dangerous to those who hunger for power. Individuals are not easily controlled. They are not easily lied to, because they inquire. They want to know more. They bother you with questions. They frustrate poor Jay Carney because they ask him questions he doesn't want to answer. They frustrate our president. They frustrate the Senate Majority Leader for the same reason, because we don't sit back and say, oh, tell us how to live, oh wise one. They want us to be dumb and scared. And
well,
they
see,
can
I've
achieve
often
that.
Said, ever since Obama was in office and started immediately with his hope and change nonsense, I've been telling my friends, but you know what? They did this too soon. They rushed him. Because if they had just waited for our generation to be gone or in the nursing home, the generation younger than us would have been.
They would have had it all their own way.
Staring at the television going, oh, mighty Obama, whatever you say. That if they had just waited 20, 30 years, they would have walked in to the socialist, quote, utopia, unquote, which is the opposite of a utopia.
Yeah, the Borg collective.
It's horrible. It would be. It's going to be horrible. We're walking into it, but we're walking into it with gritted teeth and fists right now. We're not ready to walk into it blindly, like a lot of the college students are. My daughter is, bless her heart, she's white, she's Christian, and she's conservative. Mm-hmm. And she was in the theater program at a college, at a university. She got she was in trouble. She never got a part. She got straight A's. She was on the dean's list. She did everything. She couldn't get a part in anything. And then when she had to try out for the program for the next year, she couldn't get in when kids who had lower grades than she did or missed class. When she had tonsil surgery over spring break, she was back in class Monday. She didn't miss anything because she was so driven. But because of her ideology, she was blackballed.
I've got another caller coming in, Sandy. Can I hang on a minute? We'll see who else is on the line and make it a three-way discussion. Hello there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well, sir.
You know, back to where you was talking about, you know, the biggest problem is with the schools and stuff is, and our generation, this is Lonnie.
Hello.
Hi, how are you? Our generation, we had aunts and uncles that had the time. If you wanted to learn something, they taught you, okay?
Yes.
They taught you, no matter what. They didn't turn around and say, oh, get out of here.
Right.
You know, we had so many. Bill and I had 10 aunts and uncles. I mean, you know, we have more now. But the point I'm getting at is that it's so sad that now, you know, I know some people that when I worked at Shoney's and restaurants and stuff couldn't even read.
Yep.
I mean,
exactly.
One guy was a manager, and he couldn't read. His wife did the paperwork for him.
Not surprising. You know, Lonnie, part of why we are where we are is because the family, extended family and the family unit has steadily been undermined by making And I'm not trying to be unkind because my youngest stepdaughter, her first son was born out of wedlock. I'm not stigmatizing unwed mothers. But when we made it, oh, it's admirable to have a baby and raise it alone, we were saying that you don't need two parents. You don't need grandparents. You don't need aunts and uncles. Government will step in for you. Like that stupid website that they put up with whatever girl it was, the government helping her along the way, you know. A couple of years ago during our current president's first term, the concept of the family being the first best teachers was thrown out. Everything had to come from government authorized whatever. Your aunt and uncle couldn't possibly know how to add, subtract, multiply, and divide, or if they did, they certainly couldn't teach you. They weren't trained teachers.
Yeah.
I agree, and the worst part about it is, you know, what I've learned, I've got kids, and I've got friends. I have friends that call and say, hey, I know you know how to do this. Will you come and show me, and I'll learn, and that way I don't have to worry about it. I don't have a problem teaching people. My sons, I taught them, I sent them straight down, and I said, look, let me ask you a question. Would you rather pay somebody to come and fix your stuff, lose money out of your pocket, or would you rather learn it and be able to do it and save your money for something that you need for your kids or something like that? My boys know the basics of everything. Common sense. That's exactly what it is.
Yes, sir. And unfortunately, our public education system has completely eliminated it. I remember when I worked as a tutor, the woman that I worked for, I eventually married her son, but that was after she had passed. But we worked together for 20 years and became as close as mother and daughter. She did not hire teachers to be tutors. She refused to hire certified teachers because they couldn't adapt to individualize the way they presented the information so that a child with special or different ways of processing could learn. She hired people who were not teachers on purpose because they weren't hidebound into following a curriculum, and this is the way you have to do fractions, and this is the way you have to think about numbers, and this is the way you have to write this. She had people working for her who could adapt to the child's needs in ways that helped them understand what they were learning. And it worked. It worked magnificently. I did that for over 20 years. And if I were running a tutoring center now, I would not hire certified teachers. I cannot get a job in any one of the major tutoring centers because my degree is not in education. I am not a certified teacher, and yet I do more teaching in the in-school suspension room than 90% of the teachers in ghetto public schools, and my kids actually learn. And believe me, I am not soft. I am strict. Thank you, Sandy. I am quite
strict. That's great, though. There should be more like that. I mean, there is. The schools, the way we brought up...
They know when I tell them that they've done a good job, they know it really was a good job. I'm not just saying it to make them feel good. I congratulate them when they finally struggle through and manage to add two mixed numbers correctly with all the steps. I'm there cheering them on. I don't cheer them on when they do it wrong 27 times. I cheer them on when they finally get it right. It's that concept, the idea that anything worth having is worth working for. Mm-hmm. We have thrown out with the desire to make people feel good. The whole first campaign of our current president, when in the history of this country has anybody won the office of presidency on a two-word campaign?
No one.
No one, except this, I'm sorry, this poster boy for look how liberal we are.
Right.
And I don't choose my representatives, my elected voices that speak for me, based on anything other than their principles and their political and social philosophy. I don't vote on race. I don't vote on sex. I don't vote on whether they're pretty or not. I don't care if they have two heads and are green. If they believe in the things this country was founded on, I'll vote for them. But unfortunately, most people don't think their vote matters. So they either don't do it, or they pick a name that sounds familiar or whose commercial looked pretty.
Well, and who dad and mom would vote for.
Yeah.
They were raised Democrat, they were raised Republican.
Uh-huh. Against straight party lines. People don't want to have to think. One of the hardest things to do, the age group that I work with is middle school. And believe me, when I was a substitute, I could have been employed, you know, every single day of the week if I wanted it, because nobody wanted to sub in middle school. And if you have ever worked with 11 to 14-year-olds, you'll understand. I spent my entire life teaching that age group, and no, I'm not completely crazy yet. I'm almost, but not quite. But that age group is the key, because they are still children. They do not have the life experience to make mature decisions, but they are growing away from being mommy and daddy's little boy or little girl, but they don't know which direction to go. So they clump together for the security of, oh, well, I'm friends with so-and-so. And when you're not friends with the in-group, you're ostracized. If you are a child with special needs, you can't fit into a group because you don't know how to communicate, or you have difficulty understanding what people say, or they can't understand what you say. So you are, when you force children into that milieu and expect them to function the way other preteens and early teens do, you're setting up the preteens and early teens for, oh, look at this neat target we can make fun of, or look at the kid we can hug, and won't we feel good about ourselves because we were nice to the special ed kid.
Right.
And the poor special ed kid is bewildered as all get out, because they have no clue that when somebody's laughing at what they say, they're not enjoying it because it's funny, they're making fun of them.
Right.
And this whole idiotic idea that somehow or other, by forcing children into a group with people they cannot understand, will make them somehow more compassionate, kind, and understanding. No, it won't.
No, it can't.
Yeah,
and then they wonder why there's so much bullying going on in this world.
Exactly. And the other thing, too, I mentioned this to a group of my kids in the classroom. Instead of, oh, kumbaya moment, let's all sit down and talk about it, let's start saying, suck it up, smack the bully in the mouth, and he'll leave you alone.
Yep.
Which was
stand
the
up to them. That's how you stop them.
That's
what I said we need to do to what's going on in the government. We need to stand up and say, I've had enough. I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore. But until we have enough people standing up to the bullies, and I don't just mean the president, I mean the entire D.C. area, all of the elite, until we stand up and say, I voted you in, you speak for me, and actually make them listen to it, we are never going to get anything fixed. We are being bullied. These people up there were the bullies in school, probably, because they're expert at it now. And but you're not allowed to do that. And that's the mistake of the victim. Of course you're not allowed to do that. But that's where you say, not only are you not allowed to do that, I will not stand for it anymore.
And
my son was bullied. He had rocks thrown at him. And my other son saw it. They actually bust their hearts. They went to the police. Well, the police came to me and said, we don't do anything about this. I found out who the parents were. I went to the parents' house, and I said, your son threw rocks at my son. I will not allow that to happen. We were neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So I will not allow that to happen. And if it happens again, there will be a police call. And and that son walked into the house as I was standing there. I know he was in pain that evening because his parents were, I'm sure they beat him. And my son
Good.
Was never bullied again.
Good. Yep. Same
but you
kind
have
of
to
thing
stand
happened
up to these people.
Yeah, the same kind of thing happened to my eldest grandson. A neighbor kid came from a family where the only way to show that you were important was by violent dominance.
Wow.
And that was what he knew. And unfortunately, a lot of these kids who are bullies in school, they come from that background. But sitting down in a nice, cozy circle in science class is not going to change their home life.
No,
it's not. It will not. And I'm sorry, I am not in favor of the idea of taking children away from their parents, even if the parents are jerks.
Yeah.
I can't be responsible for everybody else's children. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And if that sounds cold and cruel, maybe I'm cold and cruel.
No,
but in general, there is no perfect answer. You cannot redesign humanity legislatively, which is what liberal progressives are telling us they can do. If we just make enough laws about it, If we made a law saying it's bad to kill people, nobody will kill people. Well, we have lots of those, and look what happens. I mean, it doesn't work that way.
No,
and I really get, and I really get fed up with this silly nonsense about our police officers are there to prevent crime. No, they aren't. Their job is to catch the perpetrators of crime, haul them in so they go through the judicial system. They can't prevent anything. They can't stop that neighborhood bully kid from throwing a rock at you or your kid. Only your kid walking up and smacking them in the mouth or going to their parents and getting the parents to physically make it clear that you don't treat people this way is going to work.
Right.
Because you cannot any we had to impose this idiotic system of a table at the front door of our school because the way it's built, we have trailer classes outside of two of the doors, and we've got about 18 doors in this school. And so after Newtown and the slaughter there, everybody was all up in arms about school security. So they had to figure out how to readjust all of the staff so that somebody could sit at a table at the front door and ask people for their ID and get them to sign in when they came to pick up their kid.
Wow.
And of course, I was sitting at that table, and I'm terribly intimidating. You know, a guy with a shotgun is going to take one look at me and just run like crazy, right? I'm 5'4". I weigh about 120 pounds, and I'm 66 years old. I'm scary. I tell you, I am so scary. It's a wonder the entire neighborhood isn't cowering under their beds.
They probably are.
It was absurd. Yes, you can put in security, but Newtown had the best. They did everything right, and still, one insane person, his insanity boiled over, and he had been through the system, and everybody knew he was unstable, but we cannot predict the boiling point. And I've heard all of the, oh, we need better mental health tracking. No, because if you go to see a psychiatrist because you're depressed, which I could easily have done, I'm a recent widow, I'm immediately going to be flagged as potentially dangerous because I had a quote-unquote mental health issue.
Right.
It's there's no way that government, as an entity, can be the wise philosopher kings, as my friend Ron, who's in our chat room, talks about with Plato's parables. You cannot put government in charge of redesigning humanity any more than a committee can invent something. It can't. Individuals take charge, invent, create, and make change. Committees and governments do not. Their job, supposedly, according to our founding fathers, is to preserve and defend our individual liberty, not take it away from us because we're too stupid and nasty to be able to handle it. Liberal progressives believe the latter. I believe the former.
The liberal progressives are the ones who are breeding these people.
Yes, they are.
They're breeding this idea of entitlement, this idea that what I want is all that matters in this world, so gimme, 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 and if you don't, I'm going to do something violent. But if we teach our children at that junior high age you're talking about, that there's a consequence for every action.
Mm-hmm.
If you do something good, you get a kudos, you get a gold star, you get a whatever, you get self esteem for doing a good job.
Yes.
But if you do
uh-huh.
something wrong,
mm-hmm.
you pay a consequence, whether it's jail time,
mm-hmm.
it's time out mm-hmm. in the chair, it's no computer mm-hmm. for a week, it's no
yep.
car keys when you're 16, whatever it is, you have to have consequences. And we're not...
Otherwise...
If you're playing a game, and a ball game, and you don't hold up your end of the team because you're busy thinking about your boyfriend or your girlfriend, so you miss
uh-huh.
the ball, the consequence
uh-huh.
is your team could lose.
And you probably won't remain on the team.
That's right.
This, you know, the latest mantra with Common Core is that it's supposed to make everybody career ready. Well, career ready doesn't just mean you've got a piece of paper that says you took course A, B, C, D. Career ready means that you don't expect your boss to turn off all the lights at 2:00 in the afternoon so you can take a nap. And that is the kind of career ready mindset that our kids are getting, that the world is going to make them feel good. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
It is not going to make them feel good. Only they can make themselves feel good by achieving and basing their feel good on that achievement, something that they got. There's a novel by Robert Heinlein called Starship Troopers, from which a really awful movie was made. Please do not connect the novel with the movie. The movie was maybe entertaining, but it had nothing to do with the novel. And in it, the main character is sitting in a high school class that's required for everyone in this future world called History and Moral Philosophy. And the teacher is a veteran and a citizen. You have to be a citizen, you have to have served in the military. And he says, he walks up to Johnny and he says, "Here," and he gives him a piece of paper with blue ribbon, track, number one, first place. And Johnny throws it on the floor and says, "You're insulting me. You know I came in third." And the teacher says, "Why? You mean this doesn't make you happy?" "No, it doesn't make me happy." "Well, why not?" "Because I didn't earn it."
Wow.
Duh. Light bulb goes off over the head. We are not teaching our children this.
No.
We are not teaching them that if you want a reward, you're going to have to put some effort forward in order to gain it. Because that is how you must live when you are, if you're lucky enough to live that long, an adult.
But you know, another thing that goes hand in hand with that, yes, we need to teach them that in order to succeed, you have to put out the effort. But at the same time, they need to understand that even if you put out all the effort in the world, you still may not get what you, quote, want, unquote. You need to understand that, like my daughter learned in college, you need to understand that you can be the best of something. But when other people are involved, you do your best and you are proud with yourself, but you still may not get the accolades from others because of something you are or something you said or something you expressed, because there is prejudice in this world, good or bad.
Of course there is.
And we need to to instill that in our my sons are half Chinese. I'm white, their father was Chinese. He's no longer living. But we lived in a very rural white neighborhood, and they actually had kids at school say they were going to burn a cross on their yard because they weren't white. And and the boys, they told me this, and I said, "Well, I'm sorry about that, honey." I said, "That was not my intention when I married and fell in love and married your father. So that, that is a byproduct of our country." And I said, "And you, but one thing you have to understand, it doesn't matter. Yes, you're Chinese, and they're picking on that. But if you were fat, they would pick on that. If you were slow runner, they would pick on that. They're going to pick." I said, "You need to look at those same children and see what they say about everybody else." And they came to me and said, "Mom, you're right. Yeah, they pick on us because it's obvious. You know, I mean, it's like in your face. And everyone's like, everyone else is different than my boys." I said, "But but they're mean to everybody, Mom." And I said, those are the people that you're going to come across every day of your life. And what matters is not how they treat you. It's how you react to it. And that's something we've got to teach our kids to do. You need to react in a way that is good for you and not a way that is good, that makes them happy. Who cares about them? Your personal, our personal happiness, which is one of the things we're guaranteed, or one of our rights, is our pursuit of it, it is all based on us. And that's everyone has to be happy within themselves. And I love that book, that he wasn't happy because he didn't earn that first place. That's a cool story.
Yes,
I'm sorry,
ma'am.
I went off on a tangent there.
That's all right, dear. But believe me, I do understand, and I agree. I use that illustration with a lot of my students. No two people are going to achieve the same goals in life. It's not possible because we are not alike in that way. What we will achieve will be based on the skills, talents, and abilities with which we are gifted, our willingness to put forth effort to make ourselves better at our chosen path, and our understanding that what makes a bully is a very small person who could only feel large if he intimidates, frightens, or hurts someone else. When I teach my kids that when they give in and they lose their tempers because somebody torments them or somebody teases or somebody pushes their button, then they are handing over control to that person. When you react, when you raise your fist, when somebody is goading you to it, then they control you. I've never been really interested in being a marionette. I do not want to be anybody else's puppet. I've never enjoyed it. what I say and what I believe is the same thing. I do not expect everybody else to agree with me. There are lots of people who don't, and that's fine. I've told my students the same thing. They just do not understand at the age that I deal with that because someone disagrees with you doesn't make that person angry at you, mean to you, dangerous to you, or stupid or bad or evil.
Yeah.
When you give an opinion about something, you are basically saying, this is what I believe, this is my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The person listening to you has the freedom to say, I disagree with your opinion. Mm-hmm. And you have the freedom to tell that person, well, I disagree with yours. And if you can't find common ground and find a compromise, then you need to go in different directions.
Right.
Unfortunately, it doesn't work with very large groups of people as easily as it does with individuals. We have to have an overarching societal convention, and we do. We have a societal convention of what is considered to be appropriate behavior. It's not nice to kill people just because they stepped on your lawn and you didn't want them to. It's not nice to call people names based on external. If they have done something bad to you and you were really mad at them and you call them a name, well, you're justified. Obviously, you're angry and you have reason to be. But that doesn't mean that if you do something bad to somebody else, they're not allowed to be angry. It's the understanding that you're never going to agree 100% with anybody. Nobody does. My husband was the most wonderful man in the world, and I miss him sorely. And I have many nights still that I cry myself to sleep. But we did not have identical opinions on many things. But because we loved one another, we agreed to disagree and enjoyed our differences, because it gave us a chance to think and articulate and discuss and share. Not because we were trying to convince each other of my opinion is better than yours or I'm right and you're wrong, but because we enjoyed the spice. I don't want to live in a tapioca world where there's no flavor and all the little fish eyes stare at you waiting for you to open your mouth so they can jump in and go down your gullet. That's not the kind of world I live in. It's not the kind of world I want for my grandsons, and it is not the kind of world that I want my students to have to live in. If we can't understand, we can't teach our children to understand that it's not only our points of agreement, but it is also our points of disagreement that make us the creative, surviving species we are. If everyone agreed 100% of the time, there would be no innovation. There would be nothing new. There would be no real progress. The understanding of what progress is appears to me to be one of the fundamental disconnects between those of us who think libertarian or conservative and those who think liberal or progressive. Because to the liberal progressive mind, progress is making everyone happy and comfortable 100% of the time. For the conservative or libertarian mindset, that is an impossibility. And striving to achieve an impossibility is the definition of insanity. We're not going to agree, because these are dichotomous. They are complete opposites. You cannot have progress if you eliminate individual expertise and outside-the-box thinking. People who invent things don't think like normal folk because they get an idea that none of the rest of us had. You can't create a climate for those kind of ideas to become real if all you do is tell everybody you never can say anything that might possibly make somebody offended or feel bad. There were lots of people who were offended by the idea of electricity replacing good old coal fires and oil lamps. The people who killed whales for the whale oil for those lamps, for example.
Yeah.
You can't have perfection in this particular life. Not for anybody at all, and you certainly can't impose it on other people. All you can do as an individual is to strive to be as perfect a you as you can be, and in the process, do good to those about you rather than harm. If everybody on this planet truly tried to live by the good old golden rule, do unto others as you would be done by, we would come as close to utopia, real utopia, as it is possible to get as humanity. We'll never quite get there because, as is often said, we were created a little below the angels and a little above the beasts, and there's something of both in each of us. But when we decide that we can eliminate our humanity and make us better, that's where I draw the line. And that is the quarrel I have with progressives. Because their method of achieving this wonderful paradise is to eliminate the fact that we are human. They think the way the Borg collective thinks. I don't want to be Borg. Sorry, folks. I like my parts made of flesh. Thank you. I've really enjoyed our chat. Sandy, Lonnie, thanks for calling in. All the folks in the chat room. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes more of the show. Lonnie, do you have a comment?
No, hon, you have a good night. It was a great show.
I'm glad you were here, dear. Thanks for calling. Thanks for
your patience. You're welcome.
How about you, Sandy? Something you want to close with tonight?
Oh, just God bless everybody and have a good night. This was a fun show. Thanks for letting me
well,
call
thank
in.
Well, thank you, ma'am. Oh, it's a pleasure
a
talking to you. Oh, I'll be back again next Thursday, provided I don't have thunderstorms or a dead computer. So I'm looking forward to hearing from you and from Lonnie and from all the folks in the chat room every week here on Blog Talk Radio at Patriot Education. And I want to thank all of you, every single one of you out there listening, my friends who called in, my good friends and family members in the chat room, and all the folks who might be thinking about maybe we'll find out what this crazy lady has to say, who will dare to tune in next week. I'm here as often as I can be, which is every week, 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, until November 3rd, and then it's going to be Eastern Standard Time. And I'll have something to say about the state of our education and the state of our nation and how the two are intertwined. I believe in you, ladies and gentlemen. I believe in the best of humanity, and I think this nation of ours, historically, has given the best climate for the growth of that best in humanity. Because it's given us the freedom to dream and to do everything within our power to achieve our dreams. And I can't think of anything more I'd ask of my Creator. I think we have in this nation a gift that is beyond value. We have liberty. We have the freedom to be who we are, to innovate, create, and make the world a better place. Starting with each of us. Thanks again, folks, for being here. I'm hoping to see you all next Thursday evening. Meanwhile, have a listen to some of the other great things Patriot Families brings to us here on Blog Talk Radio. And as always, all my love to my greatest fan. Good night, everybody. Have a wonderful evening. And I will see you next week on Thursday. Hang on a minute. And here we go.
Blog Talk Radio and Patriot Family is where you need to be if you want to be informed and inspired 5 days a week. On Monday at 7:30 p.m., you can listen to the Constitution Hour. On Tuesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Family Chat. On Wednesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Right from the Left Coast. On Thursday at 6 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Education. And on Friday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Exposed But Never Forgotten. All times are Eastern Standard Time. Hope to see you there.